All right, well, this is supposedly episode 88 of We Are Libertarians, and this is not Chris Spangle talking to you, as you can tell that you can't hear my jaws slapping against one another as I speak. This is an 88. Hey, you know, it's a good fortune number in China. It is also used basically by neo-Nazis and white supremacists, say Heil Hitler. 888 being the H being the eighth letter in the alphabet, and it's twice, so 88, Heil Hitler. Chinese love it. Hitler lovers love it. So, you know, 88, hey, good thing we picked the two kinds of people in this circle that can, you know, co-host this podcast that would have been killed by the Nazis and aren't really popular with the Chinese either. So, I guess there's that in our favor. So, but this is Maya, if you guys don't recognize my voice already and how I do things. I'm helping co-host an episode of We Are Libertarians because they've been slacking, and because some of you people get sick and tired of the three or four or five or 18, however many they're up to now, of very, very white, most of them very, very little hair, not so much anymore, but kind of hefty. I know they did all circle jerk themselves into, you know, congratulations about losing weight last episode, but we're not going to do that here, and we're not those kind of people. I am a pink-haired, I guess mostly white trans person. I'm one of those evil trannies everyone hears about. Not the kind under your car. The kind that you see in porn and getting beat up on the street. And with me is Harry Price, who I refer to as the token black libertarian in the Indiana Circle of Libertarians and Anarchists. Have you been on this show before?
Yes, yep. This is my second time being on the show.
When was the last time you were on?
I think it's been almost close to January when I was back in my other podcast that I did have that just went away. That got filtered out because of the other co-host and I had some disagreements about race and everything, and that kind of blew up on during a show. It's actually kind of fun.
Why would that matter? I mean, it's not like you're black. Oh, you're black. Son
yes,
of
yes,
a...
just slightly black. Yeah. Just,
no, you're pretty dark. You're not even. You're not like mocha or caramel or whatever. No, you're straight up black. So you can't even get away with anything in that hair of yours. I mean, good lord. If I could dye that pink and it hold and look right, I would. But
yeah, it wouldn't hold. No.
That's it. I've had a lot of black women ask me, like, oh, that, you know, I love your hair and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, you should dye your hair. And they're like, honey, we're black. And I'm like, I don't understand. I don't know anything about hair, let alone black hair. Oh, it's so sad. It really is. It's depressing.
And it's somewhat hard to manage a little bit because it gets real curly very easily. Like just now, like I just got out of the shower about like 2 hours ago. So, and I did pick it out. I picked it out as hard as I could. It was high as I needed it, sprayed it down, and then the humidity got to it. Now it's down all the top of my head. It's all curled up. It's just what it does. Keeps my head warm, though.
Well, there's a plus because my hair doesn't do crap to keep my head warm. So, we're talking about hair. And wow, you guys are in for a show. As everyone should know by now, I am an anarchist, straight up, no government, no nothing. I'm not one of those weird ANCOMs, anarcho-communists, anarcho-socialists, mutualists, green anarchists, anarcho-feminists, or any of those other people that believe that hierarchy is evil as well. Hierarchy is a natural, good, needed thing. So, you know, take your patriarchy and your privilege and everything else and go shove it right up your ass. But, you know, there's that. And Harry, how are you self-described?
I really don't like prescribe to like anything. Like I used to call myself a libertarian. Then I was just like, well, I'm not really that, like, because I don't agree with a lot of other libertarians. But I used to call myself a voluntarist. But to me, when I tell that to people, they really don't know what that means, and I just mostly just tell people, well, I'm a liberty oriented person. I'm more for like keeping myself free and trying to have voluntary actions with other people, and that to me gets to other people to relate how I view the world and everything. I think anarchy is a good thing. I think it's a great state for humanity to be progressing towards. I keep hearing talk about like, hey, we need to progress. Like, right, yeah, we need to progress and progress towards anarchy. The simple fact that technology has stepped up and has set itself up, so we don't really need the government here in place. Most of the things that we have created has the ability to replace them. We don't really need them. Even like the ability to like to communicate with each other, like for some reason that needed to be controlled by the government. Like with, but that all the thing they did was create a monopoly company and to basically contract everywhere everybody's out to block people up in these little area codes, and then the phone company used that to charge everyone extra money just to call people outside their little tiny little area codes. Even though that technology hasn't changed in the last 50 years, they still had the prices cranked up through the roof until like the cell phones really started to take off and people started using those to call long distance.
Well, all government ever really does is create a barrier to free trade, as in I can't think of the name of the company, but I think they were out of Texas where you had their mail, your mail shipped to them. You did all the legal waivers. They got your mail, and then they sorted it for you. And then they, unless it had to absolutely be like seen by you in physical, they would scan it all and send you digital copies. Okay. It was like, I can't for the life. It's no longer.
That's amazing. Died. Oh.
Oh, and they would unsubscribe from junk mail for you and everything else. And if it did have to be delivered to you, they'd send it to you. They went to local postmasters and got permission to pick up your mail. And everything was very legal, very voluntary. Everything was great. And after it started picking up, they started getting some investment and other people started liking it. Well, okay. The government was like, no, you can't do that. Mm. And I'm like, okay, then can we work with you to maybe share with you how to like make to digitize mail? And they're like, no. Now, there's been, who was the guy that I'm horrible of details here because I did no show prep, and this is, none of these topics we're going to be talking about today has any forethought until they popped in their head today. So be prepared for that. But we're both extremely intelligent people, more intelligent than a regular host of this show, so you'll probably be enlightened. But
the guy
that was
highly more intelligent, more American, so yes.
Mark. But there was a guy that was, I think he was running the post office, and he was like, I have a way to make this turn a profit. And they're all like, no. And he's like, but, and they're like, no. And he's like, oh, but, no.
But, yeah. And instead, like, the only ways it's even, like, keeping itself above water is to send us junk mail.
Yeah, without all that junk mail, that was one of the threats they thought there was, is that, hey, all this junk mail, like, think of how much postage that is. Think of when that dickhead tapes that prepaid mm-hmm. postage
right.
to a brick and mm-hmm. send it to you. There's a whole bunch of money for the government right there. Yeah. So those pranks, while they're hilarious, are making the government money. So don't do them. But
right, yeah, and then you know the person you try to prank and have them have to touch it. They don't really touch it. Someone in the mail carrier has to deal with that. Everyone in the mailroom who's sorting it gets this stupid brick and like so you're just hurting somebody who has no idea, not even part of the system, is getting themselves hurt.
Except that they're working for the post office and they are part of the system. Remember,
not the system of the junk mail.
No. The junk mail people never really have to deal with that. So there's I'm sure that shit just goes in a pile of trash and nobody cares.
Right, yeah.
And some poor interns working in the mailroom getting screwed.
They don't call them interns anymore because of some legal because they had to change the definition on unpaid internships. Because if you're an unpaid intern, the company cannot see any immediate gain from your work to the company now. Yeah. So if a company picked you up as an unpaid intern, if they have you work on something, it cannot be immediate. It's got to be something in the future.
So basically, internship is everyone gains. They gain labor, you gain experience and knowledge and connections.
Right.
So it kind of works itself out. But instead now, either they have to pay you
mm-hmm.
or you have to pay them in a form of, say, like college or school, which is actually really dumb. So
right.
They're yeah. killed.
See,
not
it,
only,
it
not,
worked,
the government,
so they had to get their fingers in it to make it not work.
The government killed apprenticeships,
mm-hmm.
especially with child labor laws.
Yes.
That's when you're supposed to go, you're supposed to go mop the floors, broom stuff up, and then slowly over the years, as you mature, start learning about a particular skill or job, whatever. That was an amazing thing. I wish we still had that. This world would be much different if we did, but they killed it off with labor laws and child protection labor laws and unions and everything else.
Big labor did not want to be, outsourced to children, because children would work for less. They'd probably probably aren't as whiny as adults and don't have the whole workload that adults did.
Well, and here's one thing. It destroyed the hierarchy. Just because you've been here longer and everything else. But if you had an apprenticeship and you see this young upcoming apprentice that works harder, works faster, is better than you, and is innovative, you're going to fear that person. Why the hell would you want them, you know?
Right,
They're coming into it with a fresh mind, and they'll change things. And so that's when back in the early days of industry, that's when it started to die because, well, it was a giant threat to people had been doing the same shit day in and day out over and over and over again for 20 years. But... And then who was it? Was it Spooner, right, tried to start his own postal service?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, if I'm not mistaken, there was a postal service before the government picked up on it. There was actually people delivering mail better than the government did it, even when they first took it over.
Okay.
Which is like, well, people built roads before we had government. My God, my roads!
Benjamin Franklin actually built one of the first roads around Philadelphia? I can't remember. The internet's probably like, oh, of course you don't know where he's at. But anyways, public school education, sorry. But Benjamin Franklin actually got together with a bunch of businessmen to actually get roads paved to different towns to help trade out. It was, yes. Just a couple of businessmen that got together just like, hey, let's form some roads to help increase our business, make our business better. This happened before the signing of the Constitution.
One of the main themes that's going to be in this show, if I'm driving it, is that I've been doing a lot of reading, a lot of reading and learning about things that I shouldn't have ignored so much in previous years. I was always reading about current events and, this show usually talks about current events and current politicians and all that crap when it's literally an absolute waste of your time to do so in such an engrossing manner. I've been learning about history, about things that happened long past, things that we don't get taught in a Eurocentric schooling system or in a country that's we get all of our history from Europe and that's it's bastardized, it's Eurocentric, and it's lopsided. Depending on, history is written by men, and men have point of views, and it skews everything. So I've been doing a lot of that. When it comes to roads and trade and everything else, I'm going to just bring up my favorite people of all time, the Mongols and the Silk Road, which was, it's a collection of trade routes and everything else. And the Mongols weren't really big on governing people. They were just really big on slaughtering people, taking a cut of whoever they slaughtered from the kings, and then going from there. And like, you guys can do whatever the hell you want. We don't care. And it changed the world, I would say, almost more than any one thing. Without the establishment of the Silk Road and kind of the things that happened there under the Mongols and after they did their conquering versus, say, like Alexander the Great or Napoleon or anybody else, the Ottoman Empire or the Persians, is that it really freed things up where there was really nobody telling you what to do and how to do it. And they had this giant, quote-unquote, road. It was just a bunch of trade routes. But how did people move millions of tons of goods over over a span of centuries, over these routes without someone else telling them what they can do and what they can do and how to build them and how not to build them? People are like, wow, the ruts in these roads suck. I'm going to ask the traders to pay me money and I'll fill in all the ruts.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Holy
just
crap.
Just fill that in. And
yeah. This thing that controlled things. There's always a sense of control everywhere and everything you do. I mean, from industry standards on nut and bolt sizes. But that's a form of control,
right? But the industry standard for like certain nuts and bolts that's a voluntary system that some people like buy into, like the ISO standard,
right?
Yeah,
it's where Apple's really weird, and you pay a premium because all of their crap's different. And now they have a new charger. It's all in-house. And, that's a hard thing to sell. And some companies have actually died. They might have had a really neat, innovative product, but it died because they had some new format or some new equipment that didn't fit with everything else. That's why USB is so amazing, because everything works off USB. It does power and data and everything. So, woo!
Right, yeah. Well, the thing is, like, Apple's got that stupid Thunderbolt port, or Thunderbolt, which is it's an amazing port. Does power, video, it charges things really quickly. It's really neat, but since it's so Apple-central, it's going to die. Everyone's going to forget about it in a few years anyways.
It's not compatible with anything else. First, USB 3.0 is everything's backwards compatible.
Right.
Everything works. That's why desktop PC, anyways, is a really neat thing to just look at from outside the box, as in these guys. I mean, I can get, what, 5 different brands of motherboard that are all, you know, top of the line and really big competitors against, you know, 5 mm-hmm. different main companies competing.
Right.
And then I can get a million, and these motherboards, I can get a million different things, and it's not because anyone told them they had to. They just, like, industry standards. This size works really well. This port works really well. These connections work really well. All this other stuff. And I can go buy a NVIDIA card that works with this or that or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, taking that back to, like, Silk Road is that, and kind of that thing back then is that innovation is what kept things in check. Is that, you know, holy crap, taking everything on horseback sucks. Wagons and wheels,
yeah, let's get
and
some,
sleds.
Yeah, what if we dragged it behind this horse and let the horse do all the work for us? So when we get there, we're fresh and actually sell our goods and don't smell like sweat.
Yeah, and then shipbuilding. I mean, who sat there and said there was a, you know, the shipbuilding has to do this? Someone invented something new and it changed everything. When they changed sails where you no longer had to wait on winds going your exact direction, mm-hmm. it changed everything about how the world worked. Because what are those I forget what they're not triage sails. I know they're kind of like triangles, but they you don't have to have winds blowing in your direction. Mm-hmm. You don't have to. I mean, think of like in the Indian Ocean. What they call it, the monsoon marketplace or some monsoon, because the winds
mm-hmm.
2 times a year they had it down to like an exact science for most places that winds at this time of year would blow this way, and then you can take the winds later in the year to go right back to where you came from. They figured it all out and like just observed it. No one had to come in and regulate it and say, well, you can't sail without these winds. And people are like, yes, I can. I might die on this boat, but I'm going to do it. And things were allowed to fail and come up and come down. And so looking back at history about what stifled progress, what stifled people the most is whenever quote-unquote civilization popped up and governments popped up and strong governments popped up, is that it took all this great stuff, brought all these great people together, just like nice little pop of innovation and growth and building, and then mm-hmm. it died a very slow, miserable death and took down hundreds and thousands of people with it. And it's the same thing we can see today when everything moves much quicker. Back then, you didn't really realize things. I mean, it could take 100 years for your part of the world to see this new innovation, this new invention. Now, it's instantaneous, except for the shit that the government holds on to and the military industrial complex makes. And
yeah, but when they make stuff, it's very slow. They're hoping for innovation from the outside, but like the rest of the world, they're actually buying on stuff like that. Like the guy who developed the telescope, it's the scope for your rifle that runs on the Linux platform that uses the same technology as a fighter jet, so you can aim off your scope from an iPad. Military didn't come up with that. That was a guy that says, like, hey, this would work with this, and then I bet he tried to sell it to the military. That didn't happen, so they started selling it to the public market. It was impressive to watch him take somebody who's never shot a rifle in their life do a half-mile shot. It was impressive. And the simple fact that you can put the rifle on a rig, sit back with your phone, target it, and fire from your phone. You know, you get close to the gun.
That's up to nothing. It's like, how can we live without government?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we need someone to defend our borders. Not with crap like that.
Yeah.
You can imagine, you hook it up that to a 50 cal,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and you get the right programming, and you get the right people with a little bit of knowledge. You can track planes, you can track helicopters, and I guess for some of you that might not shoot when you... It's we track it. It's not tracking. It's training, right?
What? Yeah. The training.
Lead.
Yeah.
Well,
you lead it.
You
yeah.
lead it. But it's where you shoot in front of it because your bolts take a second to get there and it's traveling and
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Calculations that a lot of people put in their heads that the computer does for you.
Yeah, and it's not an easy thing. Like especially for someone like me, I have no depth perception, so sometimes I can't lead crap. Like if you ever want to get out, like win in a firefight with me, run sideways. Unless I have a lot of bullets to spend, just run sideways because I will not be able to pick up on you because I don't know how far away you are.
There's are people right now taking notes in the machines.
I mean, you can try to win. You're not going to, but you can try because if I can't shoot you, I'm going to start throwing Molotov cocktails and I'll burn down the entire city around you.
When you can't aim, AOE effect. Just like MMOs. That's great. Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, we're all over the place here, and that's kind of a good thing because some of the greatest conversations and learning environments I've ever been in, never stay on task. And circular talking where it comes back around is amazing. And then kind of going back with this history thing and, like, the Mongols and, like, open trade and everything open and free is Harry, you said something to me when you first got here to tell me a story about a guy telling you that echo chambers are good. The echo chambers are good for the progression of an idea. And it's that's kind of what the government does, is it takes a good idea and it sticks it in an echo chamber with regulations and laws and special permissions with IP and patents and everything else to a certain company, and it shoves it into an echo chamber, not allowing any outside influence or change or progression or anything.
Yeah, that's why when you everyone's like, yeah, we need to vote for this politician, that politician, and they go to D.C. and they start changing, because that's just an echo chamber. They did it on purpose. That's why they try to keep your politicians in D.C. for as long as possible, so they can put them in the echo chamber, and that's all they hear. That's all they know. And they just think they think you're crazy back here, and they just try to get reelected just like all politicians do, and then they get back inside their echo chamber with their buddies who are also inside the echo chamber that they created for themselves. They create that buffer zone, so that's, you know, but that's what government does to everything. That's why planes look the same like they did for the last 50 some years. There's no innovations to this is why we don't have, you know, like private planes. It's not that we don't have the technology for everyone to own our cheap private plane. It's just the FAA rules just freaking stink to try to get any plane approved to fly, or even to get your pilot's license to even learn how to fly.
And then what places you can have airports. Not like there's a guy out in Greenfield that has his own little private grass field, if you've ever seen it. And he's always getting crap because people built houses right across the street from his airport. And we're like, well, it's dangerous. Yeah, well, you shouldn't have built your house right in front of an airport, you moron. But
I bought my house there. He needs to change. I got there. But I know I got didn't get here first, but, you know, it's change for me.
Well, you know, and that's what happens is that, you know, we have all these really neat, like, it's really kind of not something people follow, but I kind of like it. I'm not an expert by any means. Andrew Kirch probably is, because he's a dick and he just got his pilot's license, which I can never get because, like I said, I'm blind in one eye. But there's so many really neat planes. There's that one plane, it's a private prop plane. It's got a prop in the front and it's got a prop in the back.
Okay.
Center on the center, like fuselage.
Oh, it's one of those center ones.
Yeah, and so it's got these weird curved wings with these big tips on it. It sounds insane because the props are facing two different ways, but it sounds crazy. There's somebody in Indiana that has one. I've seen it fly over a couple times, and it's crazy. It's so neat. It's super efficient, and it's a neat plane. But there's like a million different kinds of new innovations on private jets and private planes,
right,
and everything
yeah.
else. And there could be a But like you said, our planes that we're flying in today are still 20-something odd years old. They just keep getting repaired. Then you have overregulation, all this other crap that prohibits people from wanting to fly. It keeps the prices at a crappy level. You got enforced unions. And see, that's my problem with unions, is that unions are fine. They're a spiffy idea. They've done some good. They've done some horrible bad. But when you have the government backing them and enforcing their rule through kind of like unnatural means, you have an unnatural outcome.
Right. And they can fleece the government for money. They don't have to worry about a company falling out of business because they fleeced it too much. The union's taking more money. I'll just take more taxes. It's just that simple, or print more money. But the simple fact that for the FAA also regulate people who have owned private planes, so you've been charged to take people other places. If you just wanted to, you know, if you got buddies like, hey, pay me some money, I'll fly you somewhere. They regulate that with your own private plane.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, obviously dicking with fuel costs and how much fuel you can have and this and that. And, you know, the private flying community itself would police itself really, really well. Look at, I equate it to like a private racetrack or privately owned racetrack that's not owned by a city or something. And they have, you know, free for all days, you know, like race days and stuff. If you do something dumb or you're out there acting like an idiot, they'll all remove you. The private property owner, whoever they put in charge, will remove you. They make sure everyone's safe. They enforce different little rules and regulations on, you know, make sure you have good tires. Make sure your car's not half falling apart. Make sure this, that. Because everyone is out for their own idea of safety. And so they all enforce together. The same thing with the flying community, for the most part, does the same thing. They wouldn't let just any jag off park their plane in their hangars and fly on their airports.
Right, yeah. No matter how many, what your pilot license is, they're going to inspect your plane. Just like when I took my knee onto a Mid-Ohio, the first thing they do before you even let you on the track is they go over your car. And if they find something you like, you're not racing today. Your car can go over there and park and have fun. You can just watch. And like, and they'll pick out like little things. They find something like they really don't like. They're going to question it. They're going to poke at it. And they're going to make you change something if they don't like it. I think I had a wrong type of style of a bolt on my battery that hold my battery down. They didn't like it. It's like, well, that could come loose by vibrating. So I had to go get one of the locking bolts to put on my battery tray because I'm locking one on there.
Hey, you know what? I guarantee you someone probably came out there with the wrong kind of bolt on their battery and it came loose and it probably hurt somebody's car.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Guarantee it. Guarantee they learned from experience. Like, no, we need to do something about that. But that was a private individual's decision and a grouping of people that came together voluntarily to decide mm-hmm. to do that. And it's like, you never put any money in that track. That's not your track or your property or your garages, so you have no right to say anything. Right. Versus the government comes in and they're just like, well, it's kind of yours because you kind of paid for it and we kind of stole it from you, but you can't do anything. And then if you go to try to do it on your own land, we're going to tell you can't do it like that there either. Because we're dickheads.
Well, they also own all the traffic control systems, the tower controls. That's all FAA controlled. All the tower controls all work for the government, you know. And that's why, like, the packets that they send from the tower control to the planes are the most unsecured packet in any Wi-Fi signal that's out there. It's worse than most web protection. It's just a packet that you just send to a plane for the simple fact that they don't let anyone else touch it.
So you're saying that you could easily interfere with those packets and basically communicate with the planes, and the FAA probably would know or find out before anything happened?
It would take them a while to find out how that got in and to find them. Do they have the capability to find you? Maybe, but not if you just sent one or two and then moved. No, they couldn't find you.
But what could you do? Okay, the government's very insecure about everything. Like, there's nothing secure about anything government. And the only reason it seems like they are is because no one really tries to dick with them. All these people think it's a benevolent leader. We don't need the, whatever. And then they fight us, and then we don't fight hard enough back. But what could you do with those packets sending to planes? Well, I don't get that.
Well, it's just a simple fact that the packets are unsecure. Inside those, I'm just calling them a generic packet because it's easier. It's a simple fact that the tower control does send things to the airplanes that tells them altitude when they come in, landing area how they're supposed to come in, and any storm or information all gets delivered to those packets. Interrupting those packets, make sure the plane doesn't get any information from the tower control, or if you want to change the information that the pilot is giving. And that's why a lot of them will radio back and forth and try to talk to each other. But even that's still just a packet being sent through the air that's unsecured.
Okay, so that honestly,
you can pick that you can pick that up with a new radio. That's nothing.
So that's probably not something that's extremely difficult. I mean, if you're in that kind of like you have that type of skill set. So you're saying that our skies are completely unsecure from the most important aspect. Up at the front, when we're all having to get our planes, that's why I won't fly, but go through TSA security and everything else, and the runways are supposedly secure. But at the most vulnerable point, and the most usable point the planes are in the air, are the most vulnerable point?
Yes. Yes, there is.
There you go, government, being good at nothing.
Well, the other thing is they don't let any pen testers really try to penetrate test it. It's just there. They just set the system up and they put it there. And when anyone asked to because I heard about it from Mitch, was it ShmooCon? I think it was. I can't remember. It was either at DevCon. They were talking. Someone had a talk on it. And the simple fact that when they tried to get the government to let them test it, let them go out to a private airfield, hey, let us test this out because I can pick up your packets and I can look at them, I can translate and I can send them. They was like, no, it's secured. Well, can I test it? No, it's secured.
Didn't they just admit that there was a problem with that same problem with their drones?
Yes. Right. Well, because of the simple fact that they're also just picking up random stuff because they're kind of used the same stuff that most people use to most Wi-Fi packet signals. You can drop one of those stupid things out of the air with a UDP packet and the thing just falls out of the air. just like any other drone. You just confuse its signal that it gets. You can either send it somewhere or have it drop out of the sky, or try to get into it and have it follow your own drone home.
So, yeah. So there's our, you know, everyone talked about, you know, if we tried to do an armed revolution, will they have drones? Well, obviously not. And plus, you can probably for like $30 build a decently powered, depending on your antenna and battery or power source, a GPS DSM blocker. And well, if the thing can't communicate or figure out where it is, it's not a very good drone or helicopter with, you know, guided missiles, unless it's laser or wire guided, which they don't really use a whole lot of anymore. But yeah, so basically the military is a joke. And the only way our military ever looks powerful is by throwing copious amounts of money and manpower behind it. Look at Beaches of Normandy. Instead of just blowing it off the face of the earth with our giant ships, we're going to bomb it a little bit and then send a bunch of people up there to die. The Russian way of fighting wars that we still kind of do. So the government's not secure. It puts everything in an echo chamber. It stifles everything it touches. And that's the history of government. You look back at every major civilization, and what stifled and hurt it the most? Government. And it takes one or two major innovations or changes around the landmass to wipe out a civilization. I mean, Rome was sacked multiple times by freaking barbarians.
Yes.
And it's like, it was Rome. They had roads back then, too, by the way, guys. I mean, roads have existed for, although they were mainly built by slave labor, but, you know.
But, you know, you know,
whatever.
What are they built by now?
Slave labor?
Yeah, they are.
I mean, I don't want to say taxation is rape or slavery, but it is-ish.
Kind of is. If someone's taking money from you involuntarily, or they think they own the land you live on, they own your money. You can ask most leftists, they'll tell you that you don't own your money. The government owns your money. It's like, oh, great. So I don't own anything.
Well, there was a good 40? Was it 40 years where you couldn't legally own gold in this country?
Correct.
It 40?
40, yeah.
Yeah. It was 40 years that you technically weren't allowed to own gold. They didn't really enforce it too much after the beginning, but, and not against everybody. But yeah, there was a point in time in this country way before Barack Obama, people, or George Bush, or Clinton, or whatever. And that's another thing, is that people, I think that's why it's been so important for me, myself, my learning, is to, you know, really, you know, deep dive into history and learn about things I never learned about in school, like learning about China, which was always kind of like, well, the rest of the world's scary and we don't like it, so we're not going to talk to those people. But, yeah, you know, China, and learning about India, and India's always been kind of crazy. I mean, holy crap. Some of the stuff they've accomplished and done and how they came to be. Learning about different societies in the continent of Africa. Not the country, the continent of Africa. I never really knew there were such large developed civilizations as there were in Africa and why they fell. Well, they fell because of Europe. But
yeah, Europe came in there and started to tear everything up. Because a lot of people was like, well, you know, Africa was uncivilized and it was just ravaging war tribes going around everywhere. It was all non-secular until Europe came there and they colonized and then made it safe.
No, they actually made it a lot more dangerous, and it's been kind of ruined ever since.
Well, because they pulled out like it was prom night out of there, so everything just went to all hell.
And there's another guy, I don't remember his name, but he was on, he was closer towards the Ivory Coast than the Indian Ocean. And Ivory Coast is the one closer to us. Indian Ocean's on the other side, okay? Like Madagascar's Indian Ocean for you people. Geography lesson. Woo-woo!
Yeah.
That was not a whoop-whoop. That was a woo-woo. Okay? Don't get me confused with some juggalos. I don't have anything wrong with juggalos, but I'm just not me. But
you're on enough watch list, you don't want to be on that watch
list.
Yeah,
I don't want to be known as a gang member. A terrorist, yes. Enemy of the state, yes. Traitor, yes. Terrorist, yes. Whatever. Yes, a gang member, that's a little too collectivist for me. But there was a guy, he traveled, he had a kingdom, and he traveled around everywhere. And everywhere he went, there's this really neat story and book behind his life, and he was a emperor or whatever from Africa, and he traveled around and brought all this gold and all these things with him, and he bought up all this stuff and took it back to Africa, and, you know, so on and so forth. But there were, and then, you know, the northern part of Africa, where there's Egypt and mm-hmm. everything else. And think Egypt, one of the most advanced civilizations from thousands of years ago. That
yeah,
we know,
of the
know,
ancient world. Yeah, it was Egypt.
And it's one of the longest running civilizations in history. China is actually, I think, the longest, if I'm not mistaken. I think yeah. China has the longest, you know, China and its culture has been the longest running culture. It wasn't, you know, completely like abolished and then came back or anything. It's kind of always been there. But Egypt lasted for an ungodly amount of time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then there was actually Roman cities and Greek and Latin cities built up in the northern part of Africa. I'm horrible with all the names of the countries in Africa because they change all the time.
Constantly.
Like, it's like you look at a map of the history of the countries in Africa and it's like, boo! It goes insane. Like, Europe's really crazy too with its borders.
Except Somalia.
So Somalia's always been there. I got to move to Somalia because I hate America, so that's where I got
to
move.
So the people are telling you to go back to Africa is when they say go to Somalia, that's what they're telling you, go back to Africa. That's what I hear when someone tells me to go to Somalia.
Well, yeah, pretty much go back to Africa. Well, where in Africa? You know, it's funny. A place that it does have a very rich culture, and it was a very massively important part to some of her history because of the straits there, the towns and trade cities and ship cities that were along its coastlines, the Strait of Hormuz,
mm-hmm.
Into the Indian Sea, and the materials they had there that weren't, you know, a lot of lumber, a lot of, not marble, but a lot of different building materials.
Yeah, building materials, salt, supplies, spices.
Ivory, which really was a huge high-ticket item. So there was a lot of wealth mm-hmm. in Africa at the time, especially back then and not so much now anymore, plus with, you know, the spreading of the Sahara Desert, which I guess, you know, according to history, goes up and down all the time. But
that's also where we got most of our uranium was also Africa, too.
That's true. Most of our rare earth metals come mm-hmm. from, so all your electronics are originally sourced from Africa. Diamonds, of course.
Yep.
A lot of mineral deposits, but you got to think, you can fit India, the United States, mm-hmm. and a couple other countries into the landmass of what is Africa.
Right.
It's huge, and people, mm-hmm. and like, if you took the map, like the map of the world, and made it to scale of how much people thought of some place, Europe would be like half the world, America would be like the other half, and like 0.5% would be the rest of the world. Swear to God, you know, people think that Africa's like the small, it's some small continent and it's unimportant, and it's not. And that's mm-hmm. the thing is that
surrounded by two ponds.
Yeah. And there's some country over there with weird monkeys on it, in Madagascar or something. But
mm-hmm.
there's an incredibly large amount of things that, because of how we're kind of raised here in America and how we're made to think about things, the same thing with Europe, is that we forget that the rest of the world was just advanced as we are at our founding thousands of years before we were. The start of America was really kind of pathetic. I mean, rest of the world had communal bathhouses, they had irrigation, they had they had more simple irrigation, mm-hmm. they had, you know, water systems, they had sewage systems, they had all kinds of stuff. We've had that crap for thousands of years, yet it barely became mainstream in this country to have those things until what? I would say mainstream meaning most of the country and most of the area until probably the 40s or 50s.
Yeah.
My dad grew up he was born in 53. He was born in 53, and until he was 12, his grandparents' house didn't have any electricity or indoor plumbing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yet the
right.
rest of the world had it, you know, and a lot of country did, but a lot of this country didn't have these things, the simple standards and ideas of living.
Mm-hmm.
Our bathing practices are extremely primitive all the way up until probably the last 50, 60 years compared to the rest of the world. How we treat women has been backwards from a lot of civilizations in the world. There were the old school Muslims treated women actually pretty damn well way back when. And some of the peoples that became Muslims in that area mm-hmm. treated women pretty well. And there hasn't always been this whole patriarchy crap. And so you go back and you look at history and you're like, well, it makes the and that why all this is important. It's not just some giant history lesson. I, you know, you guys, the last time I guess one of the times I'm here, I talked about the history of Libya and Syria.
Okay.
And it took me 45 minutes to go 5 years because that much happened.
Well, it's an important history between two different states that have huge, rich history and culture, and a lot did happen between them. So you actually have to break everything down to understand what the heck happened. You just can't jump in head foots and go, well, we're going to back these because today they've got the better hashtags sort of behind them.
Right, and it's our understanding of history that helps us talk about the future. If you don't fully understand history, talking about the future isn't going to really be that productive. It's an echo chamber to talk about it with American education and an American society. To talk about history is an echo chamber because you leave out so many great examples of things that happened outside of mainstay civilizations. When you say the word barbarian like it's wrong, that depends on who was writing about that. Maybe those hill people got sick and tired of living in a disease-riddled, overtaxed city and wanted to go live freely in the mountains.
As a 15th level cleric, I hate barbarians. I just, you know, just want to be on record on that one.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for that. I don't have a D&D character at the moment, so I can't say I'm a level anything, but it would most likely be a ranger drow because I'm a huge fan of Dritz, so we're going to go with that. And but this it helped make the case for anarchy, that some of the greatest things in this world and some of the best working, you know, working communities of people happened without government.
Mm-hmm.
Innovations happened when there was less government. And amazing things changed and got better of people fighting the government. If you look at the historical references, not from the Bible, but of the times of Jesus and kind of that whole movement, was a giant fight against government, a bunch of dirty anarchists. but that's the thing, is that if you're not fully informed, you know, that everyone throws around the statement, if you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it. The thing is what history do you know? And to not know as much of it from as many different perspectives as possible means you don't know it. If you just know what they taught in school and how they show you in movies and the references we make to certain things are all non-events. You look at what disease has done to the world and how things spread and how ideas spread, how people have come together over horrible atrocities and worked through it. The same thing can happen here in this country with our government, is that we can go, hey, here's this massive bad thing. Let's get rid of it. We don't need any of it anymore. We have better technology, better channels of communication. We have 3D printers. I can print like anything I need in my house. They're working on making 3D printers that basically print new body parts.
Body parts, food, and they're trying to work one, so it's also a 3D printer pharmacy one, which that one's not going to take off. Not because the technology can't get there, because the government won't let you put one of these in your house.
True. So you could go, hypothetically, with the tech we have now, with a little bit of time and a little bit of investment and a little bit of work without the government, you could stick your finger in this little device. It takes your heart rate, it measures your temperature, it takes a blood sample, and then it can sit there and it can dispense a pill to cure your ills.
Right. What was the company like, 23andMe, that was taking a sample of your DNA? They basically go through it, tells you everything about you. About your genetic code, and then the government's like, oh, we can't have people knowing about themselves without us being stepping in here to regulate that.
You could find out what are you predetermined or what are you
predisposed to. Are you predisposed to alcoholism, different cancers, different diseases?
Liver failure. Maybe I shouldn't eat so many, you know, refined sugars. And, you know, are you prone to kidney stones or gallbladder issues? Then you could change your diet. And you could, you know, we're all individuals in more ways than just our mindsets, that everybody's a little bit, especially in America, which is funny because we are a giant conglomeration of all kinds of different races and all kinds of different peoples from different places. And so our genetic makeup's like, you look at it and you're like, In China, however, it's a little bit different because they're not so
open borders.
Yeah, their gene pool's a lot deeper than ours. It's not so shallow.
Yeah.
We do have a very shallow gene pool. Oh my God, I wish it wasn't that shallow. I mean, it's basically, you know, it's like if you poured water on a piece of metal in the desert,
mm-hmm.
and it just kind of spread out and started evaporating. That's our gene pool, basically. But I'm not for eugenics, but I am. if you vote, you should die. But learning about all this stuff and everything else is that we have all this tech. We have all this technology. We have people doing amazing amounts of research. And so if you don't, you know, learning resources can be disseminated to everybody easily in a million different ways. YouTube videos, interactive PowerPoint shit, and, you know, websites and from a different point, a million point of views. And so source material can be looked at differently. When it still comes, like, research papers can be disseminated extremely easily. Learning is you can't learn everything there is to know right now, which isn't always –
which isn't a bad thing. And with technology, education or learning has changed. Like, even myself, I signed up for an edX course last week, which is the Linux course, to learn, teach myself more about Linux. I'm out of college, but I still want to learn about new things, and I'm not going to pay someone like all this money for it. edX, I can pay a little bit to it. It's on my schedule, and then it's online. It's because everything like you can learn in school, well, it's on the internet. Someone has it out there. There's a PDF of it. There's a video course on YouTube or Vimeo or whatever video software site you're at. There's always somebody out there that'll teach you something. And there's people you can also talk to. You can get on Facebook or whatever.
Internet forums or whatever. It's like, I watched about 30 YouTube videos when I said I was going to make you a sheath for your knife. I watched about 30 YouTube videos on people making sheaths and reading through forums and everything else, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Not really. I have basic woodworking skills. I have a lot of other different skill sets. I'm like, I need to make you this sheath. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I get over to the shop, and I'm like, well, there's a giant thing of leather here. And my dad's yelling in my ear, and he's like, leather, 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 leather. Don't do wood. You're going to spend 3 days making it if you do it out of wood, and you won't like it. And you'll probably screw up 18 times because you've never done something. So, you know, it needs to be so perfect. Right. So I made out of leather. Well, because I've watched these free YouTube videos,
mm-hmm.
I knew a whole bunch of little tips and tricks to work with leather. Like, I used a belt. I didn't use scissors. After I used scissors shears to cut out the rough forms, and after I sewed it together, I used a belt sander, a tabletop belt sander,
uh-huh.
to refine the edges down, not scissors. And I was like, because of some stupid YouTube video, I figured that out.
I used a
drill press,
mm-hmm.
to drill to put the holes in it instead of a leather punch. And so it's like, you know, you haven't seen it yet. I forgot to give it to you when you got here. It's not 100% done. It still needs some epoxy on it. So,
ooh, I can't wait to see it.
it's hopefully you like it, and hopefully it's good and it works for you. But so I made this heavy duty leather sheath for it's kukri, right?
Yeah, kukri.
And you know, there's also, I need a sidebar here. Hashtag pink kukri, KUKRI. Is a new hashtag where you have pink hair on your head. I have pink hair, and Chris Spangle used my hair for his pink hair, and Harry had a pink wig laying around somewhere. But you need to have some tie-dye in the picture, pink hair, and you got to hold, hopefully, a kukri. If you don't have a kukri, hold a blade towards your neck. Not on your neck like I did, necessarily, but around your neck area, preferably mm-hmm. on the left side. Take a picture of it, hashtag pink kukri. I don't know why I'm going to make this a thing, but I'm going to make this a thing. For all that's holy, this needs to be a thing. You know what? Here, I'm gonna put it to you guys. If you ever want me to do another episode of We Are Libertarians, hashtag pink kukri. If you don't want me to do an episode ever again, hashtag pink kukri.
Yes. Yes.
Yes to all the things. But yeah. Back to the main thing is that, you know, I learned how to do something. I've never worked with leather before.
Mm-hmm.
I've modified things I've owned that were made out of leather, but I've never actually created something from a giant animal skin to something. I've never done that, never worked with it, and I did. And that's something really simple. I guess to me it sounds super simple working with big power tools and drill presses and, you know, everything else, but if anybody's seen my pictures on Facebook of the few pictures I uploaded of the one room of our garage, is that there I have a lot of crap. And when I was a kid, I convinced my parents to buy a lot of crap, which we're still using today to make things. And so it seems simple to me, but maybe computer stuff sounds simple to you, but you can constantly learn and constantly communicate with other people in a very free flow of information. I mean, someone recently did say that open source software is privileged because it's mainly white people involved in open source software.
Really? Really? Have they not gone into like open source communities? Linux is an open source operating system, is the most used operating system in the rest of the world. It's only here in the United States that we use closed source and a lot of Microsoft Windows crap. But if you go outside of the rest of the world, it's all a lot of people use open source stuff.
It comes back to echo chamber.
Yes, yeah, it's just the echo chamber that you're in. And the simple fact, it's only here in the United States because everyone's like, well, you know, you got to have Apple and GarageBand. Like, everyone does their freaking podcast with their Macintosh and GarageBand. It's like, come on, there's so many other audio programs out there. Some are open source, some are closed source ones, but there's so many better ones out there than just GarageBand.
And half of them are open sourced.
Right.
I mean, half the programs on my computer are open source. The
mm-hmm.
fact that I'm not a Linux user kind of astounds everyone I talk to when I talk about computers, because everything on my computer is either cracked, hacked, or open source. So it's like, you know, it's one of those things, but you know,
I'll get her to be cushy with the Penguin. Trust me, I wasn't all on the Linux board myself. I grew up using DOS and like Windows, and I was complete Windows person. And then I got to college, they were trying to get me to get into Mac operating system because I decided to go into doing like design work, and I did not like it. Hated Apple, hated artwork, stuff like that. And then I didn't know where else to go, and I went to the produce side of IEPUI and found Linux. It was great. It was awesome. It was amazing.
I think when I build my next computer, I know you say the computer I have is a powerhouse.
It's a beast, Core i7 beast.
You say
beast.
It's a beast.
Until DDR4 drops, you might as well stay put.
So next, I guess when I go to update my PC, I don't know what I need to update because it's got 24 gigs of RAM and an i5.
You can go to 30. You have an i7. You can go.
I have an i7. That's right.
Yeah, you can go up to 32. You can finally water cool.
I can't go up to 32. I can 24 is my max.
Then we need to water cool those 24s and water cool that processor.
Okay,
and
when I got some new hard drives, because I want to consolidate down to two hard drives and one massive portable for survival reasons.
Mean SSDs. Anyways, back to little.
Yeah. So I'll do Linux when I switch over to new hard drives. I promise. You will help me do whatever Linux is coolest at the time. I'll do that one. But
maybe we can get together and make your own Linux distro. Yes, you
can.
Can
we call it Linux Pink?
Yes, we can make we can make Linux Pink.
Yes. But back to the main point. We got off on a tangent. This is bad. But you know what? Our tangents are probably better than the ones Chris and Greg and Peffers and the rest of those weirdos go on to, because they're not really... Chris is a very interesting individual. The rest of them, not so much. I mean, Greg, I mean, he still has me blocked on Facebook, if that tells you anything. I mean, he's still... I mean, it's been like a year now, but screw him.
He's ducking you. He's ducking you.
He's
ducking you.
He's scared. I mean, when... Well, I don't...
He got a sucker punch in, now he's just running scared.
He said he's... I think he's... I don't know what he said. I forget. It was something about children, I think. But I think he pretty much supported public schooling and that it's good and it's needed. Yeah, because that does so well. That's half our main topic here is I've spent like the last 2 months learning about shit I've never heard of. That's massive world events I've never heard of. And that's one of the classes I paid attention to in school. Two of them, it's geography and world history. I love those classes. Then learning about our own history. And when people talk about the free speech and the First Amendment and talking about the government stuff, remember, it was 1798, was it, that the Alien and Seditions Act was passed?
Yeah.
Which means you couldn't even support through third party. You couldn't third party support somebody that in that support might help them talk badly about the government.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
If you look at how loosely that shit was worded, it was scary. They could basically say, you apologize for sneezing in the presence of this person you were talking about the government.
Get him. Well, like, yeah, just if anyone's out there is like, what are you talking about? My public school or my school teacher taught me everything about history. Well, what do you know about Benedict Arnold? I'm not going to tell you. Go research. Really look into Benedict Arnold, okay?
Benedict Arnold is an awesome... And this isn't just me being crazy or weird or kind of outlandish. Benedict Arnold was an hero. He was an awesome dude.
Mm-hmm.
If you go objectively read about him and don't come back with that same conclusion, you're a horrible, horrible person and you're dumb.
We wouldn't have made it the like the first what the first year in this war wasn't for Benedict Arnold.
No, and you know we need to stop talking about.
Oh, sorry, sorry. Yeah, you got to search. You got to search.
You got to read about Benedict Arnold. Actually, got to read about all of our founding fathers in depth because most of them were horrible, horrible people. The worst founding father of all was George Washington because he didn't shoot Alexander Hamilton in the face when he said "Banks." He should have been like "Boom." Just like I challenge you to a duel, you dueling. You know, he dueled everybody, not George Washington, Hamilton. But he should have shot him in the face the second he said "Banks." I mean, if you realize, the most destructive founding father, I mean, honestly, was Hamilton. Because, you know, he was one of the big proponents of we need the Constitution, not the Federalist Papers. And we need banks. I mean, banks. Remember what it was.
We need banks and try to get this hammered and central down.
I think, within the first 10 years of the signing of the Constitution, we had a bank, right?
Correct.
Was it 10 or 15?
It was 10 or 15. Yeah, it's around that range that it did come into being, and then it. It
never got renewed.
Yeah.
No, that was the second bank.
No. The first bank was there, then it went down, then the second bank came up, and that's when Andrew Jackson took out.
Yes. But we had a central bank just years after we signed the Constitution. So there's your whole idea, you know, all you libertarians and minarchists, limited government, it works. No, it doesn't. Because a truly, truly limited government set up by the Articles of Confederation.
Right.
Was a very limited government and would have let states freely compete for peoples based on how they governed. But that was so small that it wouldn't have really worked because small government is a unicorn. It's a rainbow farting unicorn, which is even rarer. It's a nyan cat unicorn. They don't exist. They can't because they made a government that could ever expand, which really all governments are. You know, they talk about.
Right,
you know,
yeah, that's all they do. But limited government is basically just a stepping stone. It needs to be a stepping stone to anarchy. You get to limited government as then you transition to breaking it down. It's the same way.
I could disagree with you there, because there's one line of thinking and argument I learned well back when I was I worked with the Americans for Fair Taxation, which is the people that put on fair tax.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up 2011 I went to CPAC as a representative of fair tax. So. But one of the lines of thinking is like, well, people are like, well, let's just get a flat tax, and we'll just, you know, bring it down to flat tax, and then we can pass the fair tax. Momentum is very important to bring into any conversation about moving peoples, is momentum. You either go all the way, or you'll never get there. So either you go from wherever we are to anarchy, but you step down to limited government, people go, oh, well. You know, that's not so bad. Maybe we can keep it here this time, and it'll eventually wear on people. Like, we just went through this big fight to get limited government, and we, you know, that's with the fair tax. We were, you know, I don't support it anymore necessarily. I don't think it's a horrible thing. I guess it would be better than what we have now, but so
yeah.
But with fair tax, they're like, well, if we get the flat tax, I'm like, well, you just convinced all these people to fight against the government's like major source of income and all this change, like 70,000 pages of tax code and everything else down to a flat tax. Do you think anyone has the money, the power, the ability, or the care to do anything better? Because it's already a vast improvement. So why not? Why not? Let's just go with that, you know?
Yeah, this is simple and easy. Let's just stay here. I see what you're talking
about. You know, you want to have a perfect modern day right now example?
Okay.
The iPhone.
The iPhone?
People go out in droves to buy the iPhone with the most minimal of improvements year to year.
Yes.
They pay more and more and more for these new phones, minimal improvement. When I buy phones, I went from the LG Lotus, that massively weird big box flip phone, to the Evo, HTC Evo 3G. Then I moved up to the HTC One. Massive improvements! To each one of my phones. That's what an anarchist does. They go up big leaps and bounds, and they go for real improvements. But most people are okay buying things that have a minimal improvement to them. That's the same thing you got to think of when you talk about people government. It's not good enough just, you know, it's the same thing happens when you say, well, we need to repeal this bill. Then we can worry about things else. No one talks, and this goes back to history, no one talks about the source of things. How is President Barack Obama able to pass all these executive orders without the system already of being built into place for him to do that and to have the organizations and the alphabet soup organizations there to enforce things and do things, none of that would be possible.
If it was, yeah, yeah, if it was like it was incrementally placed upon everybody, and I see what you're saying, like trying to incrementally break it down, though. But like most people, like you can't just quickly turn the lights off of something. Like, okay, we're turning this off for Mothmall and that project is done. A lot of people have got to be weaned off of a lot of different government programs. You can't just close WIC and the Department of Education. Well, you probably close Department of Education overnight, but like WIC and all that other stuff, people gonna have to they have to get weaned off that.
No, it well. I believe, because there's people like me, and if anybody actually knows who I am, they'll understand what I'm saying here, and I'm not just talking out of my ass, is that if, you know, you with people like me in the world, and people like Chris Spangle, and I'm sure like you, if we saw somebody in need, and we had the entirety of our income, and we had a better free-flowing market, and we didn't have restrictions on things, no one would go hungry. Unless they wanted to go hungry. No one would be homeless unless they wanted to be homeless. No one would go without shelter, heat, or cool unless they wanted that.
Correct, yeah. I'm with you on that one. Of course, most people who are homeless today is because the government either has forced them homeless, because a lot of them could just get a tent, find some open woods, and just camp there and probably get a job in the campground.
And you know what? And on that note, is homeless isn't necessarily a lot of it. For some people, it is a choice to stay homeless.
Right.
But it's not a choice to just be living in an alley, because a home is what you make it. And now all these people living in tiny homes and stuff, well, you can convert dumpsters, you can put tents next to the river where that land's never been used for anything, and they can live there just fine, but we have to go tear it up or under street things. So they're not necessarily homeless. They're just not living like you want to.
Right,
but,
yeah. They're in the privy of your view, and they're unclean to your the way you decide to live your life, the way you live your life. They're not in that norm of that box of yours. But like just like you said, like no one really goes hungry. Like when I see someone's like, I'm hungry on my side, it's like you're on a street corner asking people for food. There's three different restaurants here that you've been here for 4 hours. There's no way that you're hungry. Any one of these restaurants would probably feed you for just a minimal work.
Well, one of the guests on this show that's been around, James Neese, he was urban survival. You can go and stand outside of a restaurant, a busy restaurant, dig through the trash like a fast food place, and have like completely uneaten food being thrown away. Maybe somebody bought something, didn't feel like digging with it, and has pickles on it, and you can eat that. Then the dumpsters are full because of government regulations. Dumpsters in at every grocery store and everything else is full of perfectly good food.
So this one time, I was working for a local catering company. It was once at one time the number one and number two catering company in the city of Annapolis. And we worked for another local company doing an event for them. Well, all these people came, and they didn't eat all the hamburgers and hot dogs that we had that we brought for them for the event. So we had all this leftover hot dogs and hamburgers, which we're five-star catering. We really don't do many hot dogs and hamburgers all the time, so we were stuck with all these cooked hot dogs and hamburgers. We were on the north side of Indianapolis. There was really no homeless missions where we can get any of this food to and get it cooled down, because we're out in the middle of a park to get this thing cooled down to temperature to, you know, to save any of it. So we threw it all in the dumpster, made this gigantic, I mean, like, meat for days. I think, I don't know if you've ever seen one of those, like, regular, like, you know, like, if you've ever been to the casino, seen those casino pans of where they put, like, shrimp and stuff in, full of hot dogs and hamburgers. I think I've tossed myself 15 that day, but there was just people taking hot box full of meat and just dumping it into a dumpster for the simple fact we can't do anything with it.
Yeah, and that's... That's the thing. If we were given the opportunity to help people are still in Florida right now feeding homeless people under the threat of arrest, which means under the threat of violence. People are still helping people through that. And I know a lot of people that go out of their way to help people. I know I've been asked to do some things that probably aren't legal. Well, no, that aren't legal to help people, because the state was incapable of doing things and to helping people and protecting people. Because remember, cops don't protect you. They show up after the fact and shoot your dog.
Right, and they clean up, they sweep everything up, but they have no obligation to protect you. They're under no obligation to protect you.
And that's not their law enforcement, not protection.
Right.
You are in charge of your own protection, but they're like, you look up the example in Detroit with that security firm up there.
Right.
you know, they used to just train people for security. Now they're actually providing security, and they've had no incidents. They've never killed anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But they do a very needed, good job. There's that new app called, what is it? The Patriot app, right?
Okay, the Patriot app? Never heard of this
I think it's Patriot app or something else. I should have Spangle share it on We Are Libertarians, the Facebook page, because what it is you pay a monthly fee, and then you invite people into your network, your close friends, close neighbors, people close to you. So if you hurt yourself, you send an alert to your network, and the person, you know, you might know an EMT person or something else, they can come over and help you. If someone's breaking into your house or you think there's something outside, you don't want to go outside, you're scared or whatever, you can hit up one of your neighbors and go, hey, can you, like, look at my house and tell me if someone's trying to break in, or can you help me? And it's helping people protect themselves and not rely on other people.
So using technology to get the community to reach out to other people in your community to help out the community without having to go get the dog shooters.
Man, imagine that.
Yeah, wow.
It's like, you know, when I lived in a little town, Spring Lake in Indiana, you know, if there's a storm came through and there was, we'd go after a big storm, big wind came through, or, you know, it was, you know, tornado season, we'd go walk through the town, and, you know, it wasn't a big town, so we could literally walk through it. And we'd go see where all the trees were down, see if everyone was okay, see who had power, who didn't have power, and then we'd walk back to the house, grab our chainsaws, go run around cutting trees up.
Yeah.
Getting trees off power lines and, you know, doing slightly dangerous things for free for our community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not altruism because, you know, quid pro quo. The next year or whatever, when we were digging a giant ditch in our backyard to run some drainage, mm-hmm. we asked the neighbors to come over to help us dig because it was, you know, labor intensive. And they came because they're like, well, these people helped me, so I'm going to go help them dig this ditch.
Right, yeah.
And all these, you know, things work like that, and people work like that. Like the article you shared with me about dating and how it's a completely unregulated thing when it comes to dating. You go mm-hmm, out, mm-hmm. and sometimes you bring a complete stranger back home to your house. You buy drinks for people. There's this whole unspoken art to it or rules mm-hmm. to it and everything else. And, you know, there's a million different ways to do it and date, pick people up. You've got speed dating, you've got the round table thing, you've got internet dating, you've got a million ways to date, but that's a completely unregulated aspect.
Right. Society and culture influence the way everyone does things for date, like where to take someone on the first date. You know, taking your first date to a strip club may or may not be the best choice for a first date. Or
if it's a good first date for the other person,
mm-hmm.
it's a keeper.
Yeah. Or if you take them, you know, or getting drunk on your first date, that to most social norms, that's not okay. You know, showing, you know, taking a shower going your first date. These are social norms that our culture has formed. Like, hey, these are things you need to do for a date. There's also also cultural and social norms you do to actually pick someone up, to ask someone out on a date. And like, then also, like, society is also changing the social norm on who pays. You've noticed we've went from a whole society with men pays, and now it is with everyone. It's like, well, now the men doesn't always pay. Like, it freaked me out at first, you know, like, because like that's what I was always told from my dad, that the men always pays, and you know, my fiance, you know, she pays for me all the time. At first, it used to embarrass me a little, but now I don't care. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean. With social norms are more apt to change and adapt without government. You got to think about like how government enforces things too. And then when their fixes work backwards, when you have mm-hmm. hiring quotas on blacks, females, handicaps, everything else, you might not be hiring the best person for that job because of the quotas. You might not be allowing the best and brightest into a university or school because of quotas. Because it's this unnatural, abstract thing. Now, I understand that there's...
Oh, man, can you imagine if the government did regulate dating? Like, oh, no, you can't judge your dating partner based on gender, sex, religion...
You have to take that training
race.
Home.
Yeah, yeah, raise. You've never dated
a black person. You must change that.
Yep.
And you have to go on at least three dates over three consecutive weeks with a black person.
And
you have to.
And pay this amount. You have to pay that amount.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's going to be like little dating inspectors. You have to go get permission from this dating inspector.
Oh, you got to get a license. You got to get a license first before you begin to date, okay?
Could you imagine what the black market on dating would be like?
Oh, yeah.
These orgy houses, you know. I just want to talk to somebody that has the same interests as me. You know, all these people it wouldn't be an orgy house. It'd be people huddling up in corners talking about things we're not allowed to talk about to their dating partners.
Oh, no. It's going to be OK Cupid, but worse. It's going to be worse.
No, and then you know, that's something that's so completely unregulated, and it works. There's a lot of problems with it. And then when I was, you know, I was saying, you know, well, there is racism inherently in our culture, and you know, right there. There is a flake of truth to privilege.
Right, yeah, but when people talk about, like, try to talk about racism, they think it's just an American, thing. You know, it's like, no, racism is over in Europe, it's in Africa, it's in China, it's in Japan.
You want to know what racism is really, how it's really bad, and you want to see racism today, call a Japanese person Chinese, mm-hmm. call a Chinese person Korean, and call South Korean and North Korean. See how well that goes.
Tell a North Korean that there is a South Korea. Oh,
well, that would probably get you shot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, you also get black people who aren't honest with themselves when they try to, like, when someone talks about slavery, and it's like, yeah, our people were oppressed. Like, so were white people. White, you know, they were Irish slaves. They were.
I don't know where I read this. I need to remember where I read this, and I want to give credit to wherever I read this. I think I read it today. Is that. I know it was Wendy something. It was one of her articles. She's an anarchist, Wendy something.
Okay.
She's called a brutalist, and she doesn't really like it. But because she thinks that whole brutalist versus humanitarian thing is dumb. But if you don't know about the brutalist and humanitarian movement, and you don't know who, you know, Jeffrey Tucker kind of plagiarized something and stole that and whatever, you probably really aren't that much into politics and you're an idiot. But
or just extremely lucky.
But she made up the point that, yes, during the same time that there were slaves in America, they were a prized property possession.
Yes.
The Irish, on the other hand, were low labor dirt. The Irish were treated just as poor, if not more poor, depending on the context and the point of view, than some of the slaves were. Because they were treated as low labor trash. They weren't prized because there was an endless supply of them because they were starving to death in their home country. They came over here voluntarily, were treated, you know, horrible.
Well, yeah, and then most people who owned slaves were Scots. There were Scottish people that owned slaves back then. So the Irish were coming over like that. So and that's also the term, the I'm going to say the term, it's clearly offensive, but I apologize if I offend anybody. No, I don't care. Redneck. You know, that's just the term because your neck is red. You're out with the black people, and that's why your neck is red. You're not like everyone else, the civilized people, whose neck is white.
Yeah, because you're not in the fields laboring.
Right.
Which is kind of dumb, seeing as that this country was founded basically as a giant farm.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's somehow it became, you know, a term of insult to call somebody a farmer.
Right, yeah, a farmer. But because it's hard, because the society, the way we are now in 2014, oh, you hard work for a living? Ah, I'm beyond that. I work at Starbucks, but I'm beyond you. Well, the simple fact, the other thing is, like, the time the Emancipation Proclamation was signed here in the United States, which, you know, we all know that Abraham Lincoln never freed one slave in the country that he actually controlled, there were white slaves being sold into bondage in the north part of Africa.
Yeah. Well, and then you always got to bring back the fact is, did white people go to Africa? I hate to always call it a country, but they kind of did it everywhere. did they go, white people go over there and just round them up? No.
Nope.
Because there had already been a hundreds of year long slave trading establishment already in place.
Yep. Yes.
And it's kind of still happening a little bit over there.
Yeah.
And I can't think of a single group of people on this planet that has not been enslaved at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people enslave their own kind all of the time. The class systems and other things. And like, look at the caste system, where mm-hmm. the lowest form on the caste, they're basically slaves because that's your goal in life. But and it's not really a slave. There's indentured servitude. You have a debt. Or you want to go? I forget what it's called. It's not the vassal system where you go and work someone else's land and one day get your own land or get a giant sum of money that you can hopefully buy your own land with.
Indentured servitude, indentured servant.
That's
is that what you're going over? Where they came over here to the United States, but like, yeah, it's kind of like it is like the vassal system. Eventually, you work for a count of a county and you work for them long enough, and they eventually give you your little small little parcel.
Yeah, but it hasn't always worked like that. It hadn't worked like that everywhere, but That's another back thing to where world history, we're so echo chamber. It's so ignorant that there's been so many different forms and kinds of slavery. There was in America, there was black slave owners.
They're black slave owners. Yeah. Yeah.
In America. So, I mean, but it's so huge, and people get so myopic about shit when it's like, no, there's a million different ways to see this scenario. There's a million different points of views to see it. And, you know, a lot of people, when they made the arguments, and it's still funny that it sticks and it's still here, is the scientific racism.
Oh.
Where they said they weren't real people, or, you know, they're not necessarily humans. They're more like animals. And
mm-hmm.
They kind of did that. It's a confirmation bias with just how they wanted to treat people. They did the same thing about the Irish. Some people said the same thing about the Germans. We still today say things like that about the French.
That was a lot of, like, Darwin's book was a huge racist book. A lot of it was. A lot of people's children are like, oh, this book tells everything about evolution. But a huge chunk of that thing is racist. It's all hell.
Well, social Darwinism came up, and Darwin wasn't a huge fan of that.
No.
as much as people want to attribute his name and his works with that, he wasn't a fan. Mm-hmm. At all. It kind of didn't like that shit. Well, he died. He died before most of that shit actually came to fruition and public thing. But people used the sciences and everything else, but that still kind of stuck with us. And the reason it's lasted so long is because the government codified those beliefs and thoughts into law. The same thing with gay people and homosexuality is that it is codified into law now more than ever, that they are to be treated differently, separate but equal. And it used to be just separate, not equal, is that they can't get married. They can't have certain contractual rights. You know, you can't do this, can't do that. When it comes to trans people, your gender somehow is how you're defined in this world because of government. It's on everything. There's separate bathrooms. There's separate everything.
Mm-hmm.
We treat both sexes differently. You can't be, you have to be one or the other. And all that crap and all the racism was codified in the law. Remember, they resegregated parts of the government.
Right, yeah. You had to go back and redo that because, like, there was tons of different black politicians, and they had to go back and start moving things around like that. Just like here in Indiana, there was all kinds of black people and black-owned and black-ran towns here in Indiana. A lot of people like, no, this must have been racist. Oh, yeah, because the KKK. It's like, no, that happened later because the Quakers came here first and kind of broke a lot of that up.
Quakers. Decently cool people. They just should be a lot more violent.
Then they wouldn't be Quakers.
I want violent Quakers. I want Quakers running around with, like, tanks. Because they're like, we're Quakers. You can't tell us what to do. Kaboom! But, sorry for your earball. That might have been a little loud. But no, so this conversation's been kind of all over the place. It's followed kind of the main theme that what you think you know, you don't. And wasting your time reading about ISIS and what's going on in Iraq and Iran, while it's decent to know roughly about what's going on, but to get into the nitty gritty doesn't matter. Because, like, that one episode when I talked about Syria and Libya and Israel and everything else, that shit's been going on the exact same way for the last 70 years.
Yes.
We have been involved with dicking with that shit ever since World War I, what we've been dicking with. You look back at what we did with Central America. You want to know why Central America is such a screwed up place? Thank you, U.S. government. Because we set 100 plus years ago, I'd say 120, 130, maybe not that far back. Yeah, no, I'm going to say 100 up to 150 years ago, maybe since pretty much the founding of this country, we've been dicking with Central America's policies, governments, economies, everything. We propped up these people, those people, these people, those people. We murdered them. We did this. And we've been doing that since the beginning of this country, since before this country, when we first landed over there. We've been dicking with all these countries and all of these things. We've been having our hands in the pot everywhere. And you wonder why there's problems there. Because they're not allowed to develop on their own. We support the worst people possible. Remember, we put Saddam Hussein into power. We put Osama bin Laden into power. We put, we, I mean, we helped Ahmadinejad into power. The guy from Libya, Gaddafi. We put Gaddafi in power. And so we've done all these things. We've hurt all of these people's chances at making it on their own. We do the same thing to our people here in this country.
Yeah. But then we break their stuff up. Then we try to make them like, you're going to create a democracy based on the way we say it, how we're going to do it, and then we're going to prop up some of the dictator that we don't like. Then we'll eventually switch them up for another guy.
So, I mean, the point is that, you know, you guys want to talk about, you know, them shipping and importing all of these quote-unquote illegal immigrants because borders are so great, you know. You want to talk about your borders? Look at the history of this country, for God's sake. The borders have changed constantly. And then at one point in time, the world kind of really slowed down on the whole border changing thing. But it still happens. I mean, you look at some of the countries over by the Ukraine in the past, you know, in our lifetimes have changed quite a few times. There's been, when you go to count the amount of countries in Africa, there's 50, well, there's anywhere between 48 and 55 countries in Africa right now.
At any given time.
Yeah, yeah. It changes. Then, you know, if you can count some of the islands, because there's more than just Madagascar, and you count some of the other things, and depending on what side of the battle you're on and things like that. So there's like 50-some-odd countries in Africa nobody knows about, and they're constantly changing. You look at some of the places over there by Thailand and Vietnam, that region's changed around, and some countries are recognized, some aren't. Some aren't on your globe because a bunch of people decided not to recognize them. Like, that fucking matters. It's their goddamn country. But, so there's all these things we don't know about, we don't realize we're doing, and borders and everything else, and everyone digs into these events with a microscope happening right now, when that's not important. You have to talk about what policy enabled our military to get so big. What policy enabled, you know, they talked about standing armies in the beginning of this country, and it was like, oh, that bad.
Right, yeah.
Now we have the largest military industrial complex of the world. From all other countries combined, our military is bigger and spends more.
But when it comes down to money, they had the money to build it, so they built it. If they have the money to do something...
Well, they borrowed the money. But
right,
and then stole it.
Yeah, they got
then
the money.
Debt with the derivatives market, which is going up to a quantrillion now. Quantillion? I think it's quantillion.
Quantillion.
It's going up to quantillion in the derivatives market, which nobody knows about. Which is the most important one thing happening in the economic world right now, other than the BRICS nations and them going to drop the dollar, which means we'll have like a Weimar Republic type thing. But,
that's okay. My Bitcoins, my Doge is fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there'll be complete chaos, and the government will try to control, you know, everything like they did back during the two world wars when they controlled what you could make, what you couldn't make, what you could sell, and what you couldn't sell. But now the police state's twice as big, and all these organizations have guns and bullets and training and SWAT teams, I guess, because, you know, the EPA needs one. And so, yeah, have fun trying to start a black market in that without some very necessary and very welcome bloodshed. But, so you've got the history, and these people talking about these things don't know the history. If you're talking about the Middle East right now, and you're not referencing our policies from 50 years ago, you're an idiot. Because those policies from 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago are what enables everything happening right now. And if you constantly go back, there is no happy era in our country with a government. You look at some of the places that did the best expansion, that did the best and the most peaceful, were the places that were outside of the scope of the government at the time.
Mm-hmm. The fringe areas.
And I'm not saying just a whole bunch of, you know, it's crazy chaos and there's no order. No, order. Human beings love order. Look, I have order in my computer when I put all my files in certain places and I organize my house. It might not look that to most people that come over here, but it's extremely organized in my mind. But my definition of order might be different than yours. But we can all come together, like we talked about in the beginning, with the communities and racing and flying and everything else and industry standards. Is people want to come together and have a common, you know, a common discussion, a common language beyond just our words, but a common language.
Mm-hmm.
And industry standards and everything else, and standards aren't bad. Traditions and culture, however, are horrible, horrible things because they're not based in any kind of objective reasoning.
Right, yeah, there's no logic there. It's just, this is tradition, this is how he's always done it. Well, then it's probably wrong. Let's look at this differently.
Yeah, but it's you know, with society and standards and you know, common language, we can accomplish anything. Will it be the easiest thing in the world? No. Would it be an easy thing to transition into? No. But will it be better? Will things be better? Yes. Because you look at things like, especially now more than ever, you look at Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
You look at all these different micro-funding things. You look at all these people that now have storefronts that can be reach out to millions of people for new products. Like, I bought the...
Speaking of Kickstarter, like... Kickstarter to me, like, always seemed weird, especially when they give out rewards. That always seemed weird to me. It's like, I don't want a reward. I want a part of the company. And the how we trade shares of companies, ownership of companies, the difficulty and the regulations behind that makes so Kickstarter can never do that. And
right.
Until that is gone and out of the way, you know, you could companies. Companies could start that way. Companies can sit there and get on Kickstarter and start a freaking company just for putting shares out there. Like, you want a share of my company? I've got a great idea to make this awesome, cool, you know, new turbo housing.
And you might the more you put in, it's not just necessarily more shares, more input. But mm-hmm. then you have the choice to do that or not. You can just, like, here, you can buy 0.1% of my company for a $20 donation. Cool.
Right.
You know, you can do that,
right.
But then choose not to ever have a board
mm-hmm.
or outside influence. But then again, with things like Kickstarter and the internet, because you can reach so many people and you can talk about it so and spread information about it so easily, the idea of investment banking dies. Hopefully, investment banking is a very, very being an individual investor is mm-hmm. one thing. But I like Kickstarter with the rewards. I like that because you're giving them money, but you're getting something in return. You're getting a tangible asset.
Yeah.
You can also get more. Now, if you're a real big donor, you go outside of the means of Kickstarter and you go directly to the company and you invest it and you buy their product or you buy their resources or you sell them things or whatever. But without the government interfering with how we do business with one another, maybe there's something we haven't seen on a wide scale or don't think would work, might actually work outside of everything we know, especially because you can reach everybody. You can use things like Amazon to your shipping. You can get manufacturing from small manufacturing startups all over the country and all over the world. You can send your idea to an engineering firm that's private. Have them help you design your product, send that to a manufacturing place, have it manufactured, have that sent to Amazon, have it sold, and you've never even seen your own product anywhere except when someone sent you a sample.
Right, yeah. Well, like with a website like Fiverr, yeah, you could get on someone that does AutoCAD and they have it shipped somewhere like that. And also with the ability to have a 3D printer, you can act. To stop that, you can also make a prototype in your own apartment. You can sit there and just hook a 3D printer up on the side and print stuff out. And once 3D printers really start getting prevalent, that's when you're going to start to see, like, huge, massive copyrights start coming down on what you're printing out of your 3D printer.
And, you know, the whole thing is that copyright with the internet, which is really cool because you can source everything. You can prove who mm-hmm. said something first, who came up with something first. But if I know a lot of people might not agree with this, and blah, 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 whatever. There is no new idea. There's just new conglomeration of old ideas. But copyright, without all that stuff, imagine if you had all these micro-inventors, these, you know, like micro-brewers, micro-inventors and micro-engineers and all these other people. I mean, I know people that have a CAD machine built out of wood and power tools, and it's amazing. And all this stuff, if you had a free dissemination of all this knowledge that wasn't tied to anybody, you didn't have to pay anybody off, imagine the amount of inventions and cool shit out there. Because what would it force the market to do? This is what?
Well, it would have to fix itself. Like, so basically what you're describing is the open source, the community, the open source Linux community. People find a flaw, find a bug, they'll send it in, they'll get someone to patch it. If they, or they'll make a patch themselves, or they'll see a new device that'll come out. Some people will actually sit down, write a driver, put it up on their GitHub, and some other people may just, or some, no, and if it gets popular enough, it get put in the newest distro. Like, hey, we updated Debian. This driver needs to be in there. This driver, everyone's downloading off of GitHub, so now it's in there. And it gets fixed by everybody. Once it everyone's got their same involvement, and no one really owns the code. Everyone owns it. Everyone can choose it to change it on their own.
And that's, and one of the end results with that would be is quality would rise, and innovations for each individual product would have to rise as well, because competition would come back to the market.
Yeah.
Because you could have, you say, I'm the first one with this idea, but if somebody else can make it better, cheaper, and with a different feature, everyone's going to buy that. Think, and it goes back to PC parts. There's a million ways to build a video card, and there's a million different models, each having their own, you know, do I want, you know, the XLI, or do I want this, or do I want that? What kind of memory do I want? What rating do I want the memory to have? Is it more of a gaming memory? Is it more, you know, process-intensive memory? What kind of computer chip do I want? That would be what the market is, because there's a million companies making the same damn thing, different qualities, different reliability, different options. And then they can constantly squabble over the pricing, because the guy at the top of the food chain that says, I have the best crap, can charge the most. But you also notice in the computer industry, just because a company is known for making the best crap, if they screw up once, people destroy them. You look at companies rise and fall pretty quickly, and individual products rise and fall all the time, because they came out and they're like, yeah, we're going to charge $300 for this thing. And everyone's like, well, you know what? The guy making it for $110 over here is twice as good. And I've bought 2 years and they both fried, so screw you.
Right,
and
yeah, it, yeah, yeah.
That's the market would be like a bunch of piranhas. I mean, they would destroy anything that sucked unless people wanted to buy it. But then if you were a big company and you just, you know, so innovation and improvements and quality would be the name of the game. Look at Etsy. I can go out and buy all kinds of junk all day long. And I can go to the mall and buy crappy little gauged earrings. But if I want some good stuff and I want things that really speak to my taste, I get on Etsy for handmade stuff that's twice as expensive as the crap at the mall. Or I don't really know where else. Look at vaping. Look at the vaping market that's almost completely unregulated. There's clones of everything. And I know a lot of people don't like clones, but you know, clones are really, really cheap compared to their, you know, their main brand things, but they're a lot cheaper. And so a lot more people are in the market, and maybe someone will buy something cheaper and it's not as good. Maybe the battery's not as good, or, you know, the seals on it or the manufacturing isn't as good. But they'll at least get in the market, and that might actually help the actual manufacturers make more money, because people go, I like this design and idea, but the knockoff sucks, so I'm going to actually go and buy the real one.
Right, yeah.
And it's fine. People know, and people say, you know, you can get on a forum and Google right now, like with Kanger Tech's EVOD system. You can tell exactly, because doing just 5 minutes of research, find out how the clones look different than the real ones. Because that's with any product. People might be, quote-unquote, stealing the name or the product idea, whatever, but they'll never be able to make it as good or as well as the originals, because if they could, they'd put their own name on it.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and even if someone did steal it, it's like, well, it's too bad. You put it out there into the ether of everybody else. Every idea, there is no original ideas, for the simple fact that every idea is built off of every idea.
And I know we're talking about products and electronics and vaping and blah, 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 blah. Let's apply it to medical care.
Okay.
So, but read about community medical care 100 years ago and how we handled it and how government destroyed it. Read about the start of the AMA and shit, you know, not the American Medical Association and different associations like that destroyed it because of government. But you look at that and how we have things today. What's different today is it's not unknown who's a good doctor and who's not. You can get online. I can pull up right now. I can search the doctor that did my orgy. I can go look him up on like 6 different websites and people rate him. I have his entire schooling history. I would know if he's ever been sued for malpractice. That's how I pick my doctor. I looked up people that did the operation. I looked up all the different factors and everyone that's been to him. And you can get on Reddit. You can get everywhere and look up the doctors and you know, what people think of them and how good their work is. Most doctors actually have their patients make videos before and afters and everything else. And that's how it would work. It would work the exact same way as everything else, is that there might be different standards of care. But I'm okay with that, because that doctor might not be super good, but I can afford him.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, practicing medicine isn't free for anyone on any side. And everyone wants to make an income, right? Well, if this doctor's overcharging stuff and he's not that great, well, screw him. I'm going to go to this doctor, because he might not be, you know, he's better, but he's cheaper. So that doctor's going to go out of business, have to lower his costs, or get better.
Right, yeah.
Or go out of business. You know, you look at the way plastic surgery works.
Mm-hmm.
There's a million different... You can go get a shitty nose job or a shitty boob job. Mm-hmm. Do it all day long. But you know what you're getting into when you go to it, because there's been reviews, because the internet's here. You can go... Or you can go pay a whole bunch of money from a real doctor or a real good plastic surgeon and everything else. And it's just, you know, things work out. Same thing with security companies. They're like, well, what if we get too big? Well, first off, there without forced taxation, there is no money in war. War is a net loss. There's nothing to be gained. It's diminishing returns, because, yes, we're paying all these companies that are making billions to bomb people, but it's diminishing returns, because it has to be perpetual to work for anyone to make money. And everyone else is losing out on it because it's perpetual. It's diminishing returns. Economics 101. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to security, well, if you don't do a good job and you don't respond and actually help people, you're going to go to business because nobody's going to hire you. And because there's no regulation on who can go into it, someone will start their own damn company, because there wouldn't be this like antitrust and all this other stuff that one guy could split off from the main company that's starting to suck and start his own. Go, I'm the guy you all like from this company, and I'm starting my own, and I'm leaving those guys behind. Competition, and it would happen. You wouldn't have all these things. You know, look at salons. There's a million salons,
right?
And then when they deregulate it, there's a million more, and then some lose because they failed. They might have been the only ones with permits way back when you had permits. But on and on and on and on.
But you need a permit to braid hair. Trust me. All my sisters, when I was growing up, they didn't have permits, but you know, so it was very unsafe when they braided my hair when I was a kid. You know.
There are health effects from a bad braid job. I mean, you can get, you know, you can cut circulation off stuff. You can create dead spots. So, I mean, that's pretty important. I mean, I dye my own hair. I guess I could go blind or something.
Yeah, see?
Get
see?
An ear infection. Mm-hmm.
I don't even know why you cook your own food. See, you could, you know, you're not a licensed and trained chef. Yeah. So,
well, remember in New York, they banned cooking parties where you got together and you went over to somebody's house and they hired a chef to come over and cook for you.
Right,
so there's all these like sous chefs and shit from restaurants that aren't making that great of money, but they get hired on to go do these house parties.
Mm-hmm.
No,
can't
it's not regular. You can use the exact same equipment, exact same food and everything in your own kitchen yourself and have someone, a friend, come over and do it. But if you pay someone to do it, it's wrong.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Well, it's that way for everything else. Just like sex is that same way. You can go to the bar, bring a stranger home, have sex with them all the day, but the moment you hand them cash, then you're a criminal.
You can buy them drinks. You can give them gifts. You can do anything in the world. But the second you actually hand them dinero, wrong. It's bad. It's wrong. But, so we could talk about economics and that circles all day long, and just it's proving that we don't need any government. When you talk about courts are men judging other men, and men are corruptible and can be paid off and can be corrupt and weird and religious. Courts are bad. Third-party mediation covers that extremely fine. And if you don't get your due justice out of somebody, sometimes that's just life. I'm sorry. But if you cannot, without a shadow of a doubt, prove something for somebody else, I mean 100% absolutely prove something about somebody else, and they actually admit to it, then yeah, I'm sorry. That's not justice if it's not that.
Yeah.
And our court system can never, ever provide that with everything, with anything, really. But, plus, jails are dumb. Jails shouldn't exist ever, because it's we are not animals, and we cannot be caged, and you cannot hold dominion over another man. I'm sorry. It's just it doesn't make sense logically.
It's completely wrong.
Okay, even if you don't buy into that shit, whatever. But I guess the next logical step is, how do you get rid of the government then? Because it'll never go willingly. You can't vote the government out. You can't. I mean, Ron Paul could have won, but
right, yeah, he couldn't get rid of the government. I bet the moment he tried to get rid of the Department of Education, the Congress would have passed a bill so he couldn't, or make another Department of Education even worse with a bigger budget.
Yeah, you know, you can't pass a law to get rid of a law because that law was only like the icing on the cake. It was the icing on the sprinkle on top of the icing on top of the cake. And so the system to support said law is still there. And you, like, how would you get rid of the FBI? How would you get rid of anything? You can't do that through the governmental process, but there are different ways. Maybe you can hack into some FBI servers and install some sort of, you know, computer eating virus and destroy their entire system, throwing that into chaos. Maybe you could cut the power to that new Utah CIA or the new NSA data center. You could destroy the government and its entire infrastructure and never harm a soul.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah. Yeah. They like to make you think, like, well, if you do that, you know, FBI hands missing children, so you don't like missing children then.
Well, 4chan's done more to stop online child pornography than the FBI ever could. The only reason the FBI ever knows about half the child porn online is because of 4chan.
Yeah, pretty much.
But, I mean, it's like, you know, our government kidnaps children. There's been examples of people in CPS and everything else taking kids and selling them to sex slaves or sex traffickers. So, you know, there's that too. But maybe you could do viruses. You can destroy the infrastructure. You can,
if you destroyed the infrastructure, what would so it's destroyed? What would stop them from rebuilding it?
Well, what you do if you destroy it?
Yeah.
You've bought time. You've bought a gap of time to where either you replace it before it can rebuild,
okay,
or you destroy enough of it in enough places that it is no longer feasible to rebuild. Or you open up gaps of time where people can basically, and it's never talking countrywide. That's not necessarily feasible. But say, like, for Indianapolis, we take out all the infrastructure for the government in Indianapolis. And then we just make it to the point where a bunch of like-minded people are like, okay, well, you're not here, and we're not going to let you come back. We're not going to let you take control over things again. And you push them out. Now, it's not the most pretty thing ever. You know, it's not flowers and rainbows, and I'm sure there's a lot of questions and a lot of problems and a lot of heartache. But it's like, people here on this property no longer want government. They're gone for a minute. We're not going to let them come back. That whole don't tread on me thing. You're no longer, I got the boot off my neck. I'm not going to let it come back.
This is Indiana. A lot of people love the boot. They actually will lick that boot, you know, so.
But if it disappears?
Oh, and some of them will beg for it back.
And they'll leave. Yeah. Because it will no longer be a good for their what they want. But, I mean, that's one thing. You can, you know, I made that video on YouTube that says it was morally acceptable to shoot a cop because they are the aggressors. They are. Cops, their mere job title is to aggress and hold dominion over other men. So, but you would never have to shoot a single person. You make it so horrible to go to work for these people. Say, with cops, you take every ticket they give you to court. You never bow down to their orders. You recording them's pissing them off in mass droves. When you see a couple cops beating somebody up, and there's a crowd of 30 people and there's three cops, you make it extremely uncomfortable for them to keep doing that. You don't just sit there and pull out your phone and record them. You stop them from assaulting another individual. Like, there was just a guy, you know, you see these videos where these cops are beating the shit out of people. Like that poor defenseless black lady walking down the middle of the highway getting punched, 15 times in the face by some big white cop?
Yeah.
And there's 100 people in their car sitting there. Why did no one step out of their freaking car and stop him? Not the cop. Just stop that human being from assaulting another human being, because there's no way she could have ever been perceived as a threat against him. You do all these things. You make it uncomfortable to be a dirtbag cop. On the flip side of all this, if you destroy these things, you start forcefully supporting things that replace the government, like that Patriot app. I don't think it's Patriot. I don't really think it is. But whatever it is, And you start making your own mail services. You start making this, making that. You start finding channels, agorism, where you basically work your life outside of the government. And so if you do get the option, or you do take, it's completely feasible and extremely easy. It's just people are pansies. Destroy infrastructure of government, then you have something to replace it instantaneously that's already there and working. Or a couple things, for God's sake. So, you know, it's not unfeasible right now today to do any of that. It's not.
Well, yeah, but it's all about progressing to something. Like, if you've got a plan in place and you think it's going to work, then you either progress towards it or you just write it on the wall and you just hope for one day. But, like, I don't think anyone's really going to be able to do that here in Indianapolis. It's too connected. Most of the people here, you go around downtown Indianapolis, you can find a lot of people here are on the dole. Just not only being that from, I'm just not talking about like the people in the underprivileged category, but just going by Lucas Oil Stadium or the other
everyone
stadium.
That works for the government.
Yeah. Yeah, all these people who work for the government are on the teat of the government. It's not going
to
let the
government. That's why you say you make it extremely uncomfortable for those people to want to go to work.
Well, yeah.
They will move. You can. Well, I mean, some of this stuff might take time. There's a million ways. There's always the idea of violent revolution. But first off, I don't think even, you know, half the people that would support a violent revolution, I would only say probably about 10% of them would have the ability to actually function in said violence, because most people are pansies. Most people couldn't point a gun at somebody without a real big cause shoot them.
Yeah, yeah.
Feasible. Most people aren't killers, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, that's a great thing.
But the people that are pretty damn lonely, and will be if it ever comes to that. And the same thing on the flip side, if we ever do need to fight off an invading force known as the U.S. government into our lands that are free, well, we're going to need some people that can pull the trigger, not just own a bunch of guns and go, I went to the range twice last week. But, you know, there's a million ways to do something and go about it, but it's not going to happen with people sitting their ass talking about what's happening today, not knowing anything about history and how things work, not looking into ways of subverting the state on a daily basis, and not fighting the state with every last ounce of their being. When you take that traffic ticket to court, you don't just take a letter that's asking for your money and your servitude to the government and just do it. You fight them. Yeah, it might, you know, okay, you don't do that today. It's going to be worse tomorrow. You might, you know, you worry about your job. You worry about, what about my kids? My kids.
Well, yeah, the kid, and you have to take time off of work, go to the courthouse to go fight this ticket. So you're taking a day off of work. And the court, most of the, unless you have a group of people going with you who are all fighting their tickets the same day, they're just going to churn you out, just like, whatever, stamp, you know, and just send you about
your
business.
You have the right to take every speeding ticket to a jury trial.
Okay.
Do it. No, but and that's the thing with the internet. You communicate with other people, and so, you know, but there's not a lot of us that are capable of even understanding.
But there's got to be enough people who get those speeding tickets to bog the system down to make it worth it. So you'll probably need like 100 people to get speeding tickets on the same
100 people in the city of Indianapolis, if they took their speeding tickets, out of all the tickets, if 100 of those people took it to the traffic courts and wanted to go to a jury trial, that would destroy the system.
Right. So you need that many people. But how many people you know that will like...
Not just one day. Over a period of like 6 months.
Okay.
That would completely screw up the system. Look at what they've done to the parking meters and Keene. Mm-hmm. They've destroyed that. Just paying parking meters. It's something silly, but it proves it's a proof of concept.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems unfathomable, but that should be our goal. That should be where our goal lies, is to get rid of the government and totalitarity. Is that we don't want to just sit here and go, well, smaller would be better, or just without this law would be better, or whatever. No, our goal should be the absolute destruction of the government and constantly be looking for ways to replace it and then fight for those things. Not like, oh, I really support this company. Oh, they're under fire. I guess I'm not going to donate to their legal fund, or I'm not going to stick up for them or tell other people about it and get people, you know, fired up and blah, 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 blah. Like, you know, constantly being as an anarchist, constantly watching people have cognitive dissonance and constantly be wrong about everything they're spouting because they don't know about what they're talking about. And not just because, oh, I'm smarter. No, it's because history and context and eventual outcomes means they're wrong. They don't have any real facts or knowledge beyond their, it's feelings, it's emotions. But I don't know. I've kind of talked myself out of everything right now.
But that's where if you want to give the opponent, that's where they lie in. That's where emotions don't have facts. They're just feelings that they can lodge attacks at.
What about the children?
Right. Yeah. They just lodge.
What about the poor?
They lodge feeling emotion attacks at you. And a lot of people just don't have the logic.
What
in
about
their
the former slaves?
Logic in their brains to understand that these are emotion attacks and the government's not needed. They're over here making everybody
weaker.
What about
weaker. The other kin?
Yeah, the... Don't look that up. Do not Google other kin. I've never told anyone to not Google...
Don't Tumblr. And whatever you do, do not let your friends Tumblr.
Yes. Friends don't let friends Tumblr.
No. So, Claire, if you're listening to this, get off Tumblr. Pull your head out of your ass, and I'd say grow a pair, but you don't want them, so stop being Tumblr.
Yeah, just get off of Tumblr. But like, yeah, but the other thing with all of this is like also the same idea of forming community. So you've got people who are also liberty-minded around you. Meet them, know them, because for any of this to work, that like what Maya has talked about is you need people on the same page with you who are willing to do it, so you know they're going to stick with you. You also need the people, you know, so when the government does go right, if you're in your community, you're with your community can just stand up and go without them. That's why they try to shove everybody into faux communities. Make sure you go inside your warm TV and not go out and start talking to your neighbors or meeting everybody else. Most people's social network is just Facebook, not getting outside their houses and, you know, meeting other people, doing block parties anymore. And that simple thing is just so you know everyone in your neighborhood, you know everyone's skill set, lets you be able to survive different crises.
And especially talking, doing all this stuff without the influence of alcohol is great.
Yeah.
Doing something other than going to a bar and partying or doing something else. Probably some of the listeners to this house, and I have a very open door policy. I invite all kinds of people. I post on my Facebook, come over to game night tonight. And if you show up, you show up. We have a friend that's been playing with us now, playing our Hunter the Reckoning. She's never played these games before. I kind of knew her. We were kind of acquaintances. And she's been having a freaking time of her life. And I cook dinner for everybody, and they bring their beer. I don't drink. But, you know, have social gatherings in a very comfortable place. Meet these people once or twice. And I invite people I met online over because I've found out that if I like you from online, I'll probably like you in person. If not, you'll get the hint. Or I'll get the hint, and it's fine, whatever. People used to invite others into their homes all the time. And
and now we're scared. Like, oh no, there's somebody at my door, and I do not know them.
Yeah, and it's like, I have my number out there publicly, and I've met so many awesome, cool people. And I invite them to my home. I was like, I'd rather have people come here, and we can have a real, honest discussion at any volume we want here and not spend any money, because most Liberty people are broke because they're not willing to put up with the crap that it takes to make money in most of this economy. I'm not saying we're just all poor, but a lot of us don't have a lot of money. But, and then if you have a skill set or something cool, teach it to as many people as possible, because teaching something to somebody helps you learn more about what you're teaching about. They might have ideas or questions or whatever, and it's like, why don't we constantly and better ourselves as a Liberty community? And why don't we constantly do other things other than talking about current day topics? And it's like
politics and whining about it. Let's talk about solutions, making things better, because the only way we can get rid of the state, the government, is to make it better for ourselves.
Right. And it's a real community. It's not like, you know, everyone talks about prepping and getting food stuff. So there'll be 10 people in a 20 square mile radius, they all have 100 chickens, and they all get the same crap. And it's like, no, I don't need to get chickens if you have chickens, because I'm really good at growing tomatoes and black raspberries, and I'll trade you these for that. And
That's the problem with the preppers is that they're solo preppers. My family's prepping. They're not reaching out to their community and teaching them like why they need to prep or
like the best thing for a prepper is if you plan on prepping at home is convince all your neighbors to also grow gardens.
Yes.
Do something. Hey, that guy has a barn and he'd be really good with chickens and I'll help him raise his chickens. I'll help him build coops and everything else and I'll get eggs out of it and I'll get meat from when we kill off all the roosters. And,
right, yeah.
You know, rooster makes really good stew meat because who cares? It's stew.
You put
a rooster in a crock pot, it's fine.
Well, the simple fact that if you do not get your other people in your community to prep with you or get one with your community, they will just, if something happens, when crap hits the fan, it's just you with stuff, your lights are on, you have food, what do you think that everyone else is
going
to do?
They're going to eat you alive.
Yes.
Now, there's two things.
When I was in the apartment complex and the power went out, you know, the moment I kicked my generator on, I had a knock on my door. How do you have power and I don't? I have a generator.
Yeah. And so it's not about letting everyone know what you have and everything you can do. But if you get everyone around to help you, that one of two things are going to happen or one of two things aren't going to happen when shit hits the fan. Is one, they won't be calling the government to come help them, so you don't have to worry about the Marines knocking your doors down to get the hell out, or cops knocking at your door, you know, doing different searches like they like to do. They won't be taking your guns from you like they did in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have a community that goes, hey, we're going to support ourselves, we're going to support each other, and we don't need to call these other people in, and they won't be trying to eat you alive. So that's very simple. Then if you have neighbors that you talk to and it can, you know, improve. And then another thing is I understand the whole idea of moving closer together and moving things. But why do that across state lines anyways? Like, why not find places and like, hey, this house is only a mile down the road from me. You should buy it. I'll help you fix it.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Think stupid shit like that. It could be possible if numbers grew. Instead of getting up and driving across the state to some place like Keene, New Hampshire, which doesn't have good land. It's surrounded by the worst states in the country. Why would you go to New Hampshire? It's horrible seasons, horrible weather. It's near a bunch of places that if things did go wrong, would be very bad for you because you're so close to so many giant centers of population. Versus, what's wrong with Indiana? We might be landlocked. Yeah, sure.
It's a landlocked state.
But we also have, we have Lake Michigan, which is a channel we could take to the ocean if we needed to. We also have rivers that we can get to go other places, and there's a nice road network already set up. But
Gary, land-wise, Chicago.
Those are far enough away, we don't have to worry about them.
There's about from Keene to Boston and New York City, it's the same difference of Chicago and sitting there for you.
Okay, you know, I mean, Indiana's not a bad place.
Full disclosure, I'm an MSP member. I'm a Free State Project member. I signed up.
I would rather go to Nevada or something.
Oh, I get that thing, but I grew up in New Hampshire, so I like the place.
Yeah. Well, and you also went to Porkfest this last year.
Yes,
so.
Woo, Porkfest 2014, woo.
I'd go, but there's a lot of people that hate me. I'm sure I'd probably get beat up. But
that's more reason to go.
I'm not spending money to go to some place I don't want to go, buying a bunch of people that some of them like me, some of them don't. Some of them don't know who the hell I are, and if you don't know who I am, then you're wrong.
But, and that's why you control them.
Yes, that's true. But, so, I mean, Free State where you are. I mean, I don't know how many people, I mean, between you and my buddy John and Greg and all these people I've met here locally are all the same mindset, have amazing skill sets, and we can all skill share. And got my buddy John, he makes sauerkraut, makes sauces, makes all kinds of really cool shit. He's really good with smoking meat and turning anything into a smoker and processing foods and storing it really well. My buddy Greg, he's good with all kinds of stuff I'm not going to say on air. I'm good with everything. Well, being trans, I've had identity issues my entire life, so I've kind of gotten into everything. Just don't ask me to do any programming. I'll build your PC, but don't ask me to program it. And you know, all these things, and you have some amazing technical skills, and I don't want to say them on air because one day that might be an implication against you. wave to the cameras. But, hell, we're at an hour and 58 minutes, so let's go ahead and just cut it off and say we're done. Sorry it was rambly, but my thing is to make you think. To just throw a million ideas out there and shift that Overton window.
Yeah. Yeah, push it over the yeah. I do like to, before we close, I would like to say that I do think the goal of the Free State Project is a noble one, trying to get 20,000 people to one central location. It, because some people are where they are, you know, they here in Indianapolis, we are fortunate enough to have enough liberty minded people around us. But if you're in New York City or like Florida or, you know, Boston, you're kind of screwed. That ain't happening there.
Hey, you know where the Free State Project really should be?
What?
Key West.
Mm.
There's not a whole reason, a lot of reasons not to. You all live on boats, so you're kind of on your free land. You can go out to international water, and you can get the hell out of Dodge really easy and go to a million different cool places on your little boat.
See, I wouldn't do it if it was the Key West. I can't swim. I don't like hurricanes. The heat bothers my fiance, so she prefers a cold.
If you're
one.
On a boat, uh-huh. You go out into the waters, and it doesn't. You're surrounded by water. It's not that hot. Plus, hey, it kind of looks like a hurricane might be coming. I'm just going to take my boat and go like 100 miles out of the way. Yeah, I have like a week and a half to do this. Okay, bye.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And if you can't swim, just wear a life vest. You're good. But no, Free State is noble. The idea is good, but it doesn't always mean you have to move across state lines. And even if you say if you live in Illinois and it sucks, and you have a lot of friends in Indiana, why not move to Indiana? You don't have to go to the Free State Project. There's a lot of other places you can go and a lot of other groups of people you can find. So it doesn't, you know, it's consolidating anywhere's good. I think so.
Well, yeah.
But we're going to wrap it up. If you guys made it this long, thank you very much for listening to 2 hours of us rambling about.
Yeah, we appreciate it. We've rambled about everything, and you can listen to any other podcast, but you listen to us, so thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. And I guess continue listening to We Are Libertarians, because I might come back on more. This might become a regular thing with me and Harry doing this. I do promise next time to actually have a semblance of order into the podcast. I know we did kind of stay along the same lines of the idea, but it's a very big idea.
Right.
It's a very big topic. It's a big, big thing to talk about everything, but it's kind of more of an introductory thing. Hopefully something that we can continue doing and helping the We Are Libertarians listeners have more content to listen to.
Yeah. Because if they don't make a show, we meet every Saturday for game and we'll make a show.
Yeah, and I have no problem starting up my own show again, now that I might have a very reliable, very competent co-host that can help me build websites and shit. I mean, I already bought the domain name, so yeah. But thanks for listening to us, crazy people. Share this with your friends and be like, hey, the Liberty community is not all a bunch of white dudes. There's a pink-haired tranny and there's a black fro.
Yep.
And so we are your diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Chris, for letting me loan equipment and doing this. He is not going to edit this before we put it on, so have fun. Fuck you, Greg Lentz.